Good morning. We will begin the Health Science Committee now. I have 9:31 a.m. And I do want to ensure the presenters and those of you on the committee that we do have our full hour for our meeting. And so I would like actually to call the meeting to order now. And Winter, if you could please take roll call.
Chair McAdoo?
Yes.
Vice Chair Carvalho?
Here.
Regent Boylan?
Yeah.
Regent Brooks?
Here.
Regent Moran? Regent Tarkanian?
Yeah.
You have a quorum present.
Thank you, Winter. We will now move to public comment. Is there any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
Thank you. Agenda item number two, the minutes. We've had those before us, and I'm entertaining a motion and a second for that, please.
I will move to approve the minutes.
All right, I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second it. Regent Boylan.
All right. Thank you, Regent Boylan. Is there any discussion about the minutes or amendments? If there are none, I would like to just take a collective voice vote from the committee members with a yes and a thumbs up. I vote aye. Okay. Are there any con votes? Any abstentions? The minutes pass as presented on our agenda. For the chair's report, I will just make a quick comment because I know our presenters will very articulately cover anything that I may have been able to cover. And that is, if you are in the sound of my voice, on behalf of the Health Science Committee and many other Nevadans, we want to thank you for your care of NSHI and our families and neighbors. Thank you, as a small word, for what you've done as our healthcare providers on so many levels, but it holds a huge piece of heartfelt meaning for you. We cannot thank you enough for your service. And now moving on to agenda item number four, the COVID-19 update. I welcome Dr. Cheryl Hug English from UNR, Dean Amber Danelli from GBC, and Director Adam Garcia from the University Police Services for your report on COVID-19, please. Thank you.
McAdoo, would you like me to begin, or was there an order?
Well, I thought maybe the three of you had set up an order, but we will start with you and move to Dean Danelli and then to Director Garcia, please. Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much. Good morning, Chair McAdoo, members of the board. For the record, I'm Cheryl Hug English, Director of the Student Health Center at the University of Nevada, Reno. And I am here today to give, again, some recent updates on COVID-19 in Washoe County, as well as on our University of Nevada, Reno campus. I also want to just take a moment to thank you, Chair McAdoo, for your very kind comment. It's notable that it was a year ago today that the first case of COVID-19 was diagnosed in Washoe County. And what a year it has been. A year filled with closures, with pauses, with protocols planning, and with many difficult decisions. Today, however, I do have some good news to share. COVID-19 cases in Washoe County continue to decrease with a current 7-day average case count of 35 cases per day. Washoe County's case positivity rate has dropped to 5.5%, which is down from 20% when we met in December. And our hospitalizations also continue to decrease. On our University of Nevada, Reno campus, our numbers also continue to decrease. Last week, we had a total of 6 positive students and 2 positive staff members. The Student Health Center continues to offer daily COVID-19 testing. We have also added the use of the rapid 15-minute Binax antigen test, as well as a rapid PCR test that has results available within 30 to 45 minutes. We also provided testing for our returning residential housing students at the beginning of spring semester. Since we last spoke in December, we have gained a significant tool in helping us to fight this virus. Not one, but three very effective vaccines have now been approved by the FDA and are actively being distributed. This is a remarkable accomplishment in just a year's time. The recent approval last weekend of the Janssen or Johnson & Johnson vaccine is a welcome and significant addition. This vaccine requires only one dose rather than two and is far less complicated to store and administer. The Student Health Center has assisted our county by holding several vaccine pods for our campus healthcare workers, campus police officers, child care workers, and employees who have met the state eligibility criteria. While the vaccines are a welcome advancement in our ability to combat the spread of COVID-19, the distribution is a complex and challenging process. And I think the state and the counties have really done a remarkable job trying to get this vaccine distributed quickly, fairly, and equitably. While we would all like to be able to offer vaccines to everyone on our campuses right this minute, we are limited by the number of doses that our state and communities receive. It will take continued patience and flexibility as we work through the challenges of getting these vaccines distributed. I do want to say a quick word about the variants of COVID-19 that we've all read about. The South African variant, the UK variant, and others remind us that we need to continue to be vigilant about this virus. Although there are helpful trends, we still need to practice social distancing, wear facial coverings, and to promote good hand hygiene. The advent of these vaccines does not yet mean that we can relax on these other important measures. We don't yet know how long the immunity from these vaccines lasts, and if indeed these vaccines prevent transmission to others. While we all have a bit of corona fatigue and an eagerness to return to a more normal campus experience, our collective efforts to remain vigilant is essential. There's much to be optimistic about. We're making great progress in combating this virus, and we want to do all that we can to continue these trends with the goal of having more fully open campuses in the fall. These next few months will be critical in determining whether we will be able to reach that objective. I want to end by just recognizing the tremendous efforts on every level that all of our NC institutions and campuses have made in combating COVID-19 and the strategies, the protocols, and policies that have been implemented. As we look forward with hope for a more open fall of 2021, let us not forget what we've learned from 2020. One of the silver linings of this crisis has been the collaboration, communication, and joint efforts that have been made collectively with all of our NC institutions. One recent example of this is the establishment of the NC Mental Health Task Force, which is evaluating and assessing the mental health care needs on our campuses and strategizing about ways we can improve access to services. We all continue to learn and to grow from each other. I will end there. I thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions now or at the end.
Thank you, Dr. Hug English. Do we have any questions for her? Can't thank you enough for your service and for your report, and I greatly appreciate it. And now, Dean Donnelly, if we can move to your report, please.
For the record, Dr. Amber Donnelly, Dean of Health Science and Human Services at Great Basin College. Good morning, Regents. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today regarding the COVID-19 efforts in the rural counties. As I talk to you today, it is hard to believe that 1 year ago, I was approached and asked to be part of the emergency operations team for the county and the NC COVID team. While the road has been rocky, I can attest to the fact that we are now seeing some positive impacts that are taking place. Many of those have been due to a system approach and open lines of communication from all the institutions, making sure that needs are being met not only at the NC level, but also within our communities. I am pleased to report the following. Contact tracing is still being done at Great Basin College for four counties. This includes Lander, Elko, Humboldt, and Eureka. Tracers include nursing faculty, nursing students, paramedic students, radiology students, and even a welding student who went through the CTE Health Science 1 and 2 and EMT course while in high school, which prepared him to be a great asset to our tracing team. In addition, we have some really exceptional community members who also work with us. Our highest caseloads were close to 700 active cases per day. And as of this week, I am pleased to report that we are finally down to an average of 90. With the support of UNR and Dr. Cheryl Hug English, Great Basin College was able to create 2 approved lab locations for COVID-19 BiNEX testing. This allowed us to complete testing for our housing students that were returning, GBC employees, nursing and CNA students who are required to have testing prior to clinical rotation. In addition, we have utilized COVID testing to support testing requirements for coaches at the Elko County School District. A focus on vaccination throughout each of these counties has now been taking place since around mid-December. Elko County vaccination is taking place within the Northeastern Nevada Regional Hospital, as well as the county doing vaccination pods. The Great Basin College nursing students have played a huge role in volunteering their time to staff both hospital and county pods. If you received a vaccine in Elko County, it was likely from a nursing student. To date, there has been just under 10,000 primary vaccinations within Elko County. A focus on getting enough vaccine for the second dose after the delay in vaccine distribution due to the weather has taken place over the past 2 weeks. The rural counties should be receiving Johnson & Johnson's single-dose vaccine this coming week and will transition into additional lanes starting on Monday. This will include supply chain and essential workers. And for us, that includes our mining industry. Overall, there has been an excellent response in the rural communities for those that want to receive the vaccine. Specifically here at Great Basin College, 62% of those that are eligible have been vaccinated at this time. In closing, I would like to thank Great Basin College President Joyce Hellens for her continued support of our COVID efforts off of this campus and our other campuses. In addition, we receive a lot of support from the State of Nevada Public Health Department and are grateful for those individuals that communicate with us on a daily basis. At this time, I would welcome any questions that you all have.
Are there any questions for Dean Donnelly? I don't see any, but I want to call you Amber, of course, Amber. I want to thank you for your service. And obviously, living in rural Nevada in Elko, I see your hand in every single thing to do with healthcare. So thank you for all your extra effort on top of serving GBC and NSHE so well. And Director Garcia, we are ready for your report. And I feel like you've done nothing but give reports since 8 o'clock this morning. So thank you for joining us. I appreciate it.
Well, good morning, Chair McAdoo. Thank you for that. Good morning as well to committee members, presidents, and Chancellor Rose. For the record, my name is Adam Garcia, Vice President for Public Safety Services, Southern Command. Since my last update to this committee in December, Southern Nevada, just like Northern Nevada and Elko, have seen a significant ebb and flow of the COVID-19 cases. Currently, we are mirroring the trends that we're seeing across the United States and across the state, with confirmed cases down in Clark County and on our campuses. Police Services Emergency Management Division has worked with the Southern Nevada Health District, UNLV Medicine, and the nursing programs at CSN in Nevada State, as well as at the Clark County Regional Policy Group, establishing an NSHE vaccination point of distribution site, or a pod, at the UNLV Student Union, as well as the CSN Henderson Student Union. Because of the urgent need to expand vaccinations, the pod was expanded to include first responders in mid-January, then NSHE faculty and staff, 70 and above, employees whose job requires close contact with others, then new teachers and staff from the Clark County School District, as well as local and charter schools, and most recently to NSHE employees age 65 and above. We continue to hope that we will move soon to additional categories of faculty, staff, and students as soon as these groups are approved by the Southern Nevada Health District in consultation with the State of Nevada Immunization Program. The UNLV pod has a capacity of 2,000 vaccinations each day of operation. Due to the staffing and capacity issues that we've encountered, the CSN Henderson pod is scheduled to close at the end of March. However, we have been coordinating with the City of North Las Vegas to establish a community pod at the Tyrone Thompson Student Union, located at the CSN North Las Vegas campus. This pod is intended to address the needs of that community as well as ENSHE. And the goal, when it's up and running, is to administer 2,000 vaccines per day. Unlike our other pods, this endeavor will be operated by the City of North Las Vegas beginning March 22nd. The creation of the ENSHE pods and our processes and protocols was strongly supported by Chancellor Rose, President Whitfield, President Zaragoza, President Patterson, and President Achara. Mark Kahn, the Dean of the UNLV School of Medicine and Vice President for Student Affairs, UNLV President and CEO Michael Gardner, and Vice President of Business Operations and Strategy Julie Young were all truly instrumental in ensuring that this process became a reality. Assistant Director of Emergency Management Greg May, Senior Director for Public Affairs Cindy Brown, CSN Vice President Patty Charlton, in Nevada State College Vice President Edith Fernandez, as well as Dr. Jamie Davidson from UNLV, all have contributed each day to our endeavor, believing that what we are accomplishing is truly the most important thing that we will ever do in our careers, or maybe even in our lifetimes. And in doing so, they're saving lives. In that vein, I'm pleased to report to the committee that as of 5 p.m. Wednesday, we provided or facilitated 250,000 COVID tests at UNLV test sites. As of this morning, our combined pods at CSN and UNLV have administered 55,036 vaccines to ENSHE, to our faculty, our staff, as well as to the greater community. We're very proud of what we've accomplished here. And the significance of this is that we have gathered the institutions in Southern Nevada to provide this service for our community and our institutions. That ends my report, and I'm available for any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Director Garcia, for everything you do. Are there any questions for Director Garcia?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Regent Perkins.
Thank you. I guess this is for everybody, for all the people involved. I understand that the once you pop the vial, you have to just distribute the entire vial or else it goes bad. Is there a way to notify the public, like when people don't, when some people don't show up, or at the end of the day, you have vaccines that have to be used that day? Is there any way to notify people so that they can take advantage of that?
We're speaking for Southern Command, if I may. So we provide vaccines on an appointment basis. So we generally know how many vaccines we're going to administer throughout the day. There may be one or two, I don't know that I've heard, more than a handful that may be left over at the end of the day. And we do have a list that's established of people that we can call who have to respond to campus within 15 or 20 minutes to receive the vaccine, but that doesn't happen very often, at least for our vaccine pods.
If I may, Madam Chair, Michael Gardner for the record, I just wanted to, Regent Perkins, just wanted to answer your question. We, as Director Garcia has pointed out, we've given over 55,000 today, or we'll go over 56,000 vaccines. We are very, very careful. We've never had more than three or four extra doses in any given day. I'm also very proud to say that we've never thrown away a single dose because we consider these precious, precious commodities. So so there's generally, if there's two or three extra between the people who are volunteers and other folk and such, we've been able to use those. But we're very careful, starting around 3 or 4 o'clock, not to open too many vials so that we don't have extra, as has happened in other places across the country. So that being parsimonious keeps us from having to deal with the, people showing up wanting long lines to get in. So that's how we approach the problem.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That's great to hear.
And it's similar for us at University of Nevada, Reno.
Thank you.
And out here in the rural counties, it's the same thing, mostly scheduling people. And then when there is a situation where there's, and it doesn't happen very often, where there's excess, a text message does go out to anybody on the waiting list, and it basically becomes a first come, first serve, but it has not been wasted.
Thank you. That's really great to hear.
Thank you so much. Are there any other questions or comments? I appreciate the presentations, and I was struck by that it's not only gratifying, but it's life-saving to see our NSHE institution's role in taking care of education and health from our health science providers. So thank you for your service. And welcome to agenda item 5. And it is my pleasure to welcome Dean Schwenk from the UNR School of Medicine.
Madam Chair, members of the Health Sciences Committee, good morning. Nice to see all of you virtually, at least. The previous presentation covered some important information that I will be able to skip over. The overarching theme that I want to offer this morning is both the tremendous contributions that the school has made to the pandemic, and the way people have risen to the challenge and risen to the occasion. But I don't want to diminish the fact that it's taken some toll. And I think you should be aware of the tremendous stress that we're all experiencing, the budget reductions, the open positions. Some other forces have come together. And I just think you should know that everyone is working at 110%, but it does take its toll, and I trust that's the same for other institutions and other reports that you will hear. But before I move on, I think it's important that we take the opportunity to congratulate Dr. Mark Kahn and the faculty at UNLV for their wonderful news about their accreditation. This is a long process, and some of us have lived this for a long time. Dr. Kahn's editorial in the Las Vegas Sun with an outstanding summary of a real complicated history. And of course, we feel very close to many of his faculty members who were our former faculty members many years back. And so we just share in the great news and congratulate him for this great achievement. It's a wonderful achievement for the entire state. So Madam Chair, let me just pick off a few items here on the outline that you have. With regard to the vaccine, I'll just say that our students have been a tremendous source of volunteerism for staffing vaccine administration sites, medical students, but also extends to community health science students and nursing students and others. And it's been a wonderful example of the volunteerism of our students in general. With regard to the Nevada State Public Health Lab, they are perhaps the peak example of standing up to this great challenge, providing extraordinary service. But I'll also say again that they are maxed out and running hard. And again, furloughs and other issues do take a bit of toll. And I know that's not news, not something over which you have control, but I just want you to know how hard they're working on behalf of the entire state, including some really sophisticated testing to monitor variants coming into the state. We do have an interesting study that's continuing to run under Dr. Mark Riddle, our Associate Dean for Clinical Research, about vaccine awareness, vaccine hesitancy, vaccine adherence, and it's consistent with studies that you will see publicized more widely on a national basis, but it does give us a bit of a sense for how to target some populations who are more hesitant and to try to bring the entire state into a greater compliance or greater adherence with vaccine recommendations. On a more positive note, under awards, I'll just highlight again one of our outstanding investigators, Dr. Scott Early, whom you have already honored with one of the Regents Research Awards. He represents, I think, a whole cohort of outstanding investigators at UNR Med who continue to be very successful with their grant activities. And as I've said in the past, the problem that creates, which is in a sense a good problem to have, is extraordinary tightness of our research space, our laboratory space. I'll jump to the bottom briefly to say that, as I publicized previously, Dr. Mick Hitchcock, a wonderful supporter and advisor to the university, has provided support for renovation of some space that gives us a little bit of flexibility in our research lab space. And I will note that really every time we can get another lab in place, that's more grants and more visibility to the great research taking place at the university. The renowned health integration, of course, is probably the most dominant topic for us, and you'll hear about that at the full board later this morning. Under undergraduate medical education and medical students, I'll just note that all of our students, by and large, are immunized. Quite often, our community physicians and our hospital partners expect that at this point for students who are on their clinical rotations, and we've been able to accomplish that. And so all of our clinical and our quasi-clinical teaching, like anatomy lab and clinical skills teaching and other things, are up and running. Our fourth-year students, I think you should be aware, have had a really complicated year because they could not do the typical away rotations that most medical students do to look at potential residency programs or to get additional experience. Interviews were all done virtually. There's a sense that students from less prominent or less elite schools might suffer in that regard, but we have great confidence in our students, and I think they will continue to do well in the upcoming match, which is in a couple of weeks. But I will also note that we have made the decision, as you are aware, for virtual events for both match day in 2 weeks and Hooding in mid-May. And I think it's fair to say that that is just one more hit on the morale of our medical students. And they, you know, badly wish that we could do an in-person event to celebrate this great achievement, as do we wish we could do that. I have met with them on several occasions, and I have told them that it would be disingenuous on our part to say that we're as upset about this as they are, because they, of course, are probably most affected, but I think we're almost as upset as they are in our inability to do this, at least at this point, based on the current restrictions as they stand. I think our students are holding up reasonably well, but again, I think you should be aware that this year has taken some toll on the overall sense of positive educational experience that we like our students to have. With regard to GME, we do have new leadership for both our geriatric and our hospice fellowship programs. Are going through some curricular restructuring, some overhaul, kind of hitting the reset button on both of these important fellowships. With regard to our clinical practices, they, as you know, have been hit hard financially by the pandemic. We are in the red, probably $200,000 a month. Some months, other months have been bolstered by some of the PPP loans and other stimulus funds that have been made available, but we are definitely in the red, as are many medical practices. We're doing the best we can with virtual visits and patient arrivals but the numbers are definitely down. We have secured, as you know, a PPP loan last fall, and that is in the process of being forgiven because we have maintained our employment. We had a disaster relief loan that was intended to be paid off at a very low interest rate over a very long period of time. But because of the Renown integration, we may be required as part of the settlement, should that integration be approved by you. We will have to actually repay that loan so that there are no outstanding debts should we accomplish this integration. But of course, that depends on you and your eventual endorsement. I wanted to highlight our new Moana building. This is this large multi-specialty group practice that we're developing in the middle part of Reno. We've gone through the renovations of that space. It's a spectacular space, beautiful renovations. Our facilities and administrative leaders did a fabulous job. And it's going to be a wonderful place for many of the practices on campus to come together in the community and to be much more community-based and integrated as a multi-specialty primary care group. I pretty much covered everything under research, and I'll just finish with the VA to say that they continue to be an extraordinary partner. We continue to have very exciting collaborative events with the VA. There is going to be a major change in leadership with the executive director, Lisa Howard, being tapped to take on a much larger assignment in a much larger institution in the VA system. It's a sign of how well she's regarded in the VA system, but it's a great loss to us. But she built a team at the VA that now will stand up, and I think we will be fine until a new executive director is selected. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Dean Schwenk. We do have a question from Board Chair Mark DeBrava.
Thank you, Chair McAdoo. Dean Schwenk, good to see you, and thank you and your team, faculty, students, and the state lab for everything that you're doing to help the state of Nevada with this pandemic. My question, I did see on the video, of course, legislative, the Senate Finance and Assembly Ways and Means joint meeting, and they talked a little bit about the state funding for GME. If you recall that program that's been around now for a few bienniums, could you really briefly just mention what Reno has maybe benefited from that? And do you have anything in the queue? Are we going for another ask, please?
Yeah, so that program, as you know, is provides startup funding on sort of a competitive grant basis for either expanding programs or creating new programs. In the early stages, which is now three biennia ago, if I'm correct, there were lots of opportunities to expand programs, and that had a pretty quick return on investment because the infusion of funds into a program already accredited could be expanded. We benefited both in family medicine as well as in establishing a new primary care internal medicine track in Reno. So that expanded our internal medicine program. And there was some funding as well in the psychiatry area. But as you know, we have limited programs in Reno. Las Vegas, for which I was responsible in those earlier days, I think benefited tremendously, and Dr. Khan may wish to comment on that. But I would say in general for us that at this point, we do not have programs that are really amenable to expansion. And so now we're having to think about programs to start from scratch. Pediatrics is the most obvious candidate for that, and we're in active discussions with Renown as part of the integration discussions to consider PEDS as our kind of our first target. Some of the difficulty with the state funds is that in the past, not sure that's true going forward, but in the past, there were certain technical requirements and the funds had to be expended by the grantee within the fiscal year. And that's really hard to do in residency startup because there's usually about a 2-year run-up before full operation. And so you want to be able to expend those funds over time. I'm hoping that there may be some modifications in the program. But in general, the short answer to your question is Reno has benefited modestly in the past and probably has one or two possibilities going forward.
Thank you, Dean Schwenk, and thank you, Chair McAdoo.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Dean Schwenk? All right, and it is my honor to welcome Dean Kahn from the UNLV School of Medicine. We're anxious to hear your report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, Regents, for the record, Mark J. Kahn, Dean, University of Nevada, Las Vegas, School of Medicine. If I could have my first slide. Next slide, please. Thank you. So a couple announcements. Firstly, I'd like to thank Dean Schwenk. I've not yet been here a year, but our collegial relationship really has made me feel welcome, and Dr. Schwenk has been really a trusted advisor for me. I'd like to start by saying probably our most important news, which the Regents are aware, and that's that we received our full LCME accreditation about 3 weeks ago. That makes us the second ACGME accredited medical school in the state. Secondly, our medical education building is underway. I'm told that construction is ahead of schedule, and we're due to have occupancy late summer, early fall 2022, and we're very thankful to our donor group for making that a reality. We're gonna have our first graduation later this spring, and our first match, and we look forward again to training future physicians for the state of Nevada. My colleague, Dr. Gardner, will talk about COVID vaccination, and you've also heard from Director Garcia, but you know, we have really been a state leader with vaccination. We're working to begin some new clinical programs that are really necessary to care for our population. Some of those include cardiology, medical oncology, but you know, in follow-up to Regent DeBrava's question, you know, there are residency programs and training programs that aren't available in our state. And we want, as we grow, we want to make sure that we use these programs to adapt to the needs for our state, including needs for programs in dermatology, urology, and many others. We're going through the process to appoint a new assistant dean for diversity, equity, and inclusion. We have an associate dean, but we see this as a major mission for our school. If I could have the next slide, please. We've talked about match and graduation, but we've also been working to develop new programs within the university, specifically a combined MD-MBA program, a combined MD-MPH program, and we're also working with the School of Fine Arts and the Honors College to put together an early acceptance program to attract and retain some of our brightest high school students in the state with a pathway to an MD degree that really starts at the undergrad level. So we think that's going to add a lot to our university and to our community. If I can have the next slide. For admissions, we've received over 2,000 applications for 60 seats. Our number of applications has gone up steadily each year that we've been in operation. We've extended more than 35 now, but extended, I think, about 50 or 60 offers. Our average GPA and average MCATs are very good. Most of the people that we admit to our school are Nevada residents. 16 are economically disadvantaged, as determined by the Association of American Medical Colleges EO scale. We have folks 15 underrepresented in medicine, 13 are first generation, and we have two veterans. So again, our mission to care for our population and have a medical school class that looks like our population is being realized. If I can have the next slide. In graduate medical education, we've had successful matches for our fellowship programs. And again, we anticipate the main match in several weeks. Our residents and fellows, as Dr. Schwenk mentioned, continue to care for COVID patients in the ICU. They also follow up with these patients in the outpatient setting. And to echo one of the sentiments, our healthcare system really is getting stressed by the COVID pandemic. Things seem to be easing up, but I think we're all going to have to be vigilant of the mental health effects that COVID has really on our entire community. If I could have the next slide. We've had promotions in the tenure track faculty, really for the first time as a new school of medicine. And we're starting to gather data regarding faculty evaluations, promotion, et cetera. If I can have the next slide from research. We're a new school, but you know, we have a research mission, and that's one of our fundamental pillars. In the second quarter of fiscal 20, we had three grant awards amounting to over $400,000. These included grants in Nevada traffic safety, Nevada road users, and firearm injuries. We have two proposals in the second quarter that totaled over $2 million, and those deal with stem cell therapy and rural medical health. The total number of awards and trials now is 26, and as we grow and come out of the pandemic, we want to rapidly accelerate our research efforts. If I can have the next slide. Diversity, equity, and inclusion is one of our major mission. We've aligned now with the Association of American Medical Colleges framework. We have outreach for accepted medical school applicants and GME residents from groups that are underrepresented in medicine. We mentioned that we're about to approve a new assistant dean for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And soon-to-be Dr. Benita Wolf recently completed an equity and inclusion administrative fellowship at Harvard University in the Division of Science and the Department of Physics. Finally, we're going to host the fifth annual pre-medicine conference designed to provide people underrepresented in medicine about the medical school application process and timeline. If I can have the next slide. We've been actively working on raising money for our school to support our mission. We have closed two six-figure scholarship gifts. We are drafting a seven-figure gift to the school, and we're working on a grateful patient program. We also have formed a Dean's Council of Leaders that's helping us make strategic decisions, and we're about to close on our first endowed chair for the School of Medicine. If I can have the next slide, I'm now going to turn this over to my colleague, Dr. Michael Gardner, the Vice Dean for Clinical Affairs and Strategy. Dr. Gardner.
Good morning, Chair McAdoo, Vice Chair Cavallo, Regents. Thank you for the opportunity to speak again. Miss seeing y'all in person, I just want to say. Hopefully we'll be able to see y'all again here by the fall. FY21, the financial performance, as you all know, we turn in these numbers relatively early. I can tell you that through January, at the end of November, we were $380,000 in the black. Through January, we are still in the black, although it's slightly less than that. We opened a laboratory. We got a generous donation from a donor, anonymous donor, to help us buy the laboratory machine, which we got certified to do antibody testing. Frankly, we haven't done a lot of those, but we do have that ability, and we'll be able to do more of those. This machine actually allows us to do other point of care testing. And when we get beyond COVID, which I do see us getting there, I do see that brighter, ever brighter light at the end of the tunnel, we'll be able to use this machine for other lab tests. We've actually, we had the curbside testing, which I've discussed before, that ran from March to July. That testing, we did 19,000. We've continued to do some COVID testing, so we're actually over 20,000 tests now. But our main focus, as has been reported earlier, has been the COVID vaccination site. Adam, Director Garcia mentioned Julie Young and Greg May, but both of them have done an incredible job. My people have been working literally 7 days a week, setting up folk, working very long hours. They started work, you know, we started making these plans 2 weeks before the new year, around the middle of December. We opened up I think January 16th. We're finishing now today will be our 35th day that we've been open. With the two sites at the UNLV Student Union and at the Student Union at CSN Henderson. Again, today we'll pass 56,000 doses. I can't tell you how many compliments we've received from people coming in. While we certainly are happy that we've been able to serve the NG community, As you can imagine, the vast majority of people we've taken care of have been non-NG folk, people over the age of 65, grocery store workers we started this week, so people from Target and Sprouts and Smith's and Whole Foods. And we've done 90%+ of the office, the TSA officers at the airport, other law enforcement people, other first responders, healthcare workers such as dentist offices and mortuaries, you know, a whole variety of different professions. We're now doing Uber and Lyft drivers and other rapid bus drivers from the rapid transit and taxi drivers. We look forward to when we're hopeful that in the next couple, in the coming weeks, next couple weeks, we hope the casino workers, the age will drop down to 55, maybe even 50, and we can serve even more people. Meanwhile, while we're doing this, we are still running our 17 clinics. We're still seeing patients. We're still covering hospitals, both you know, principally at UMC, but also at Sunrise. We have physicians at the VA. We have physicians doing some work at Mountain View, Summerlin Hospital, Dignity, and Henderson. So we are still doing all the things that we used to do while we're doing this operation. And there is a little stress with that. And I want to thank everybody that works at, for UNLV Medicine, as well as the UNLV School of Medicine faculty, residents, because a lot of people are picking up extra work because we've had to pull people to do the vaccination site. So everybody, whether they're physically at the vaccination site or not, are actually contributing to this effort. And it's gratifying that we've heard multiple comments from civic leaders in Clark County, the city of Las Vegas, that, and I'll summarize it by people saying, oh, this is why we wanted a medical school. This is what a medical school can do for us. So I think it really has been a way of people understanding what we want. Again, on the finances, I've already alluded to, you have the, on the next slide, that through November, we're $379,000 in the black for the year. That's actually significantly better than budget. Now, part of that, in full transparency, is we got an $800,000 CARES Act to help us defray some of the costs of COVID. We do have the $4.2 million PPP loan, which is a debt. We have turned in the paperwork. So it's not on our consolidated financials. It's a, right now it still is listed as a debt. We are waiting to hear if that's going to be forgiven. We are cautiously optimistic that we have met the criteria for forgiveness. We think we'll hear about that sometime between the 1st of April and the 1st of August. We suspect probably in May or June. We probably will have an update for you on that at the next meeting. One of the things, if I could, next slide, please, that I felt obligated to share with you is that in the post-COVID world, the challenges that we've faced financially will still continue. And historically, and Dean Swank knows this, that for years, traditionally, there was about a 3 million plus mission support, is what it was called, to help from UMC to first UNR, and then for the first year of existence of UNLV School of Medicine, to help defray uncompensated care, bad debt. That for, at the time of the transition, was negotiated to be 1 year. That precedes me. Typically across the country, the principal teaching hospital that works with a medical school in the more of the traditional relationships, particularly public hospitals, and some of you know that my last job, I was an EVP with the third largest public hospital system in the country. And we gave the two medical schools over $18 million a year that worked with us to help defray that cost, plus paying for the contracts for the physician services. Without that $3 million, $3.2 million was cut in 2018, but we still continue to do uncompensated care. Our docs are on the front line for internal medicine, for trauma, for surgery, for OB, for pediatrics. And it is appropriate as a state school that we serve the underserved, and we're happy to do that. And our docs do a great job. That said, our docs do not, our faculty, our residents don't do those services for free. They're still paid whether or not we get reimbursed for those services or not. And frankly, those paychecks come through UNLV, ultimately NSHE, ultimately the state. And so we are on tap this year to have over $6 million of uncompensated care, of which the vast majority comes from UMC. Even when you see our clinics, the majority of the money that is coming in the uncompensated care in our clinics is follow-up of care that we provided at UMC. UMC quite appropriately gets over $70 million a year in disproportionate share money from the federal government. That's for doing uncompensated care, money that they certainly deserve. Typically, the physicians that do that care, because they have to show that they're doing so much uncompensated care, that actually has to be seen by physicians, typically get at least a small amount of that disproportionate share to defray the physician costs. This is not a problem we're going to solve today, but I wanted the regions to be aware that de facto, whether implicitly or implicitly, NSHE is funding this right now and has been since 2018. And in full transparency, I feel obligated to share that information with the regions. And hopefully there's a solution either at the county or the state or the federal level. We want UMC to thrive. We need it to thrive. We have a relationship with them for clinical care, for graduate medical education, for undergraduate medical education. We need them to be successful, but we can't be successful and carry this uncompensated care without some relief. Post-COVID, quite frankly, the practice plan is highly likely to return into being in the red if we don't deal with this problem. So I feel like we have a year, more or less, to figure this out, or the practice plan will be going back into, it'll be highly likely that the practice plan will be going back into deficits. So this was mainly for information. I know I've alluded to this in some of the other health sciences meeting, but I felt like I need to be a little bit more explicit and specific so that you're aware of the challenges we're facing. Arguably, this is the single biggest challenge that the practice plan will face post-COVID. And that ends my report, Chair McAdoo.
Thank you.
I'd like to say thank you, and we're open for questions.
Yes, and I know that Board Chair DeBrava has a question. I will call on him, please.
Thank you, Chair McAdoo, and I'll be brief, and we know you have one more presentation to go. To Dean Kahn and to Dr. Gardner, congratulations on the full accreditation. For the sake of the rest of the committee members, it's nice to see this final step. It was 8 years ago this month, it was March 2013, that this very committee under new business brought up the idea of a UNLV School of Medicine. So it's nice to see. I know there's other regents that are still on the board that remember that. We all have more gray hair, but it's nice to see the project come to this level. With that being said, and we checked that box off, the next concern I have is with the practice plan, the original line of credit or loan that was taken out and how that's still current and prevents a dean's tax. So just briefly, Dean Kahn, can you mention that and just identify the amount that it is? And I know there might be solutions down the road, but at least for today's meeting, just to identify what that still is and how did it start?
Yeah, Dr. Gardner wants to take that. Go ahead, Dr. Gardner.
So as many of you know, before my time at the transition, the school was started with $7 million and a credit card, which is unprecedented in starting a medical school. Generally, medical schools, when they open, are fully funded. So this was not a usual thing to do. There was a line of credit of $19 million, of which the plan used 15 of that $19 million. $9 million of that was to pay salaries for faculty who had transitioned from UNR to UNLV, but their billings and collections stay with UNR. This kind of transition from a branch campus to a full campus, there's only been one or two other places that have done it. For example, in Texas Tech, when the El Paso campus became an independent campus. There, for example, the collection stayed with the faculty when they went from one school to another, so there wasn't a need for that loan. For whatever reason, that wasn't the way it was done in 2017, again, before either Dean Kahn or I were here. So the balance of that, we wound up spending also $6 million for Epic to join, and that was also a decision, I think a correct decision, but a decision that was made before our arrival. So that led to a total amount of $15 million. That's been paid down by about $1 million. So the principal is about $14 million. And then with the present agreement to pay that off over 10 years, adds another one point something in interest, making a total debt of about $15 million. And actually, full transparency, with the $4 million PPP, the total practice plan debt right now is about $19 million. Although, again, we're optimistic that we'll be forgiven for that $4 million. So that is the debt that the practice plan is encumbered with at this time. Again, we've taken no extra debt since that transition agreement was made to open the school.
Thank you. And if I may, Chair McAdoo, thanks for that explanation, Dr. Gardner. And I've said publicly before, I mean, I look at that as the price tag of the UNLV School of Medicine in order to get it started. And I think now, soon we should address that debt or that burden shouldn't be encumbered upon the faculty practice plan. The doctors shouldn't have to pay for their own med school for the benefit of UNLV and Southern Nevada. So those are only my comments I have. I also underscore what you said about UMC and that uncompensated care. That's something else that has to be dealt with. But again, we've reached full accreditation, and now we turn our attention to others. Thank you very much, Chair McAdoo. Thank you, gentlemen.
Right. Thank you.
I don't see any further questions. I would ask you, Chair DeBrava, if you, when we get to new business, if you have a plan for a discussion on that at the next meeting, you could request that at that time. And so to both the schools of medicine, I want to say that I was a new regent at the same time as the first cohort of UNLV School of Medicine students. So I must tell you that 4 years later, I am excited to celebrate match day and graduation with that first cohort of students this coming month, as well as my fourth year of celebrating UNR School of Medicine students. It is just an honor and privilege to be able to do that. So thank you for all your provisions to make that happen. And it is now my privilege to welcome Dr. Lily Garcia with the UNLV School of Dental Medicine. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair McAdoo and Vice Chair Carvalho, and the new regents as well. I've had the privilege to connect with one or two early on. So for the record, my name is Lily Garcia, Dean, UNLV School of Dental Medicine. Just want to highlight a few things going on because I know I respect your time. Under student success, I have to tell you, even under the challenges of the pandemic, we've had timely matriculation. We've had no need to extend our programs, and every change we've made to accommodate under the pandemic, we've had to go through our commission, our LCME, our Commission on Dental Accreditation, which approved every change and accommodation we made to fulfill the standards for graduation. So I'm pleased that the class of 2020 left in a timely manner. I'll also tell you we're on track for this year. So it's based on a lot of hard work of our faculty and our staff to support this progress, because in essence, for those who have visited, we're operating our own small hospital here in order to continue this. We had to turn on a dime and we shifted to virtual interviews, and I thank the Graduate College for assisting our Associate Dean for Student Affairs, Dr. Christina Cajas, and they shared some of their resources to be able for us to pivot on that. We're on track to recruit the class of 2025. Is probably our highest percentage of Nevada and Nevada-tied students, the target of approximately, as I look real quickly, at 71% of our class. And so I'm really proud of that. We're working hard at developing pipeline issues to bring in Nevadans to graduate and hopefully stay here. because of COVID, we're still operating at about 75% capacity. The majority of our students and faculty and staff are vaccinated, but we're caring for people that may not be. So we still are operating at really high levels of safety measures. And I know that people are just weary of this, but we come in with enthusiasm and encourage them and keep them going, because it all comes down to taking care of our patients and our community amongst ourselves as well. Among the faculty, I'll tell you, we're in the midst of faculty recruitment. With the support of President Whitfield and Provost Heavey, we've been allowed to recruit, so we're in the middle of that. Hopefully at the next meeting, I'll be able to make some announcements. We're getting some very high caliber individuals coming from all over the U.S. that want to be here. We're a highly attractive university, and it's coming together very well to have a really nice group of people to join our faculty. I know they will be excited, because many of those faculty are literally on the clinic floor. I don't mean exhausted on the floor, they're that, but in addition to helping cover and staff our patient care. So in the area of research and scholarship, what was set aside as a plan about 2 to 3 years ago, it's coming to fruition. Just in FY 2020, we had over $4 million in grant submissions, and we're funded right now from those submissions about $650,000. So I credit Dr. Jeff Ebersole, our Associate Dean for Research, for really having a methodical approach and in building more faculty capacity in that area. Our scholarship and publications are up as well, which gives a very high presence for our school among the 77 dental schools in the U.S. and Canada. So we're proud of that accomplishment as well. In the middle of all the pandemic, you know how many people are challenged just to see their physician. Now, without insurance, there are a lot of people that are totally have no access to care. We operated two of our free community service clinics, which are operated on site. We were very careful and measured how we did them, because it's in the middle of all this. People were respectful and were able to provide that care. This is based solely on donations, so we're at the same time working at stronger development efforts to keep these efforts funded. We did move the children's free care within our clinic operations, because we knew now that they were at home, some of the parents were able to bring them in during the weekdays versus a Saturday. So we've been able to accommodate those, and we're grateful to our pediatric dentistry and students managing that as well. Actually, our third free community clinic is tomorrow, and this is where we're taking care of women victims of domestic violence, the homeless, our veterans, as well as some children who may come in. So I think I credit our staff and faculty at the front door, and President Whitfield knows this, and Provost Stevie, they stop you at the door no matter who you are, and they will put that thermometer right up in your face, make sure you're screened and safe before you enter our facilities. And so thank you to their patients for enduring that. But we take this seriously, and I'm proud to say nothing originated from our clinics, and that's what we I have to knock on wood on that one. We're still being diligent, because, as you know, some of our population has not had the advantage of the vaccinations. I thank Dr. Khan, because we're building on a successful IPE program in collaboration with other health science deans, so I'm appreciative to them. And he's helping push us to building a community clinic. So Southern Nevada Health District has already spoken to us individually. They're going to invest in a dental clinic, and we're looking at the space and what they will do, and see how our students have access to some of that, providing care outside our clinics in our neighborhood. And a little stressed, 18 days before our total world shut down, we were set for our accreditation site visit, and they stopped it. That same weekend, our last cohort of students were able to finish a licensing exam when those examiners were told you can leave the premises in the middle of the exam. And every examiner, as I showed up to make sure they'd stay, they said, no, we will stay, we will complete this. So we were fortunate on timing. So with that cancellation, the accreditation site visit, it's now been rescheduled. We will be the first dental school among the 77 schools to undergo a two-part virtual and later in-person site visit. So we're almost their test case. And so because of that, Dr. Marcia Dittmeyer, who's our Associate Dean for Education, has worked hard, because in addition to our 7 years of data, we've had to add the additional year under the pandemic additional data, which is not easy. So I credit her and her team really working on this. With that, I'm more than happy to answer any questions for you. And for the new regents, I'd love to show you the place. Give me a call and we'll give you a tour, as long as you're willing to get your temperature taken and get your special wristband for walking around our place. We'll let you in. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Garcia. Are there any questions for her? Well, I do have a comment that it is extremely difficult to provide social distancing when you're working in a patient's mouth. I mean, not just difficult, it's impossible, correct? So thank you for all of your work and effort that you're putting in to follow those healthcare protocols. And having worked in dentistry, I actually know that dentists have always provided those as well as other healthcare providers. But I can't thank you enough for your diligence and vigilance in doing that, because we've heard from every presenter today that that is really our only hope for us impacting COVID-19. And so I'm greatly appreciative of it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, if there are no further questions or comments for Dr. Garcia, we will move to agenda item number 8, which is new business. Are there any new business items that anyone would like to bring forth? All right, we will work on the agenda. And Winter, if we could please have any public comment.
No public comment.
Great. Then I will adjourn this meeting, and Chair DeBrava has let me know that our full board meeting will begin at 10:45. So we have a few minute break, about 7 minutes actually. So thank you everyone for your participation today. Bye-bye.